What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Arnies. We are three scar-givers just trying to find that freaking child of fire. I'm Matt Johnson, and I'm honestly still not clear on what Charlie Hunnam's natural accent is.
I'm Keith Baker, and I definitely enjoyed a cup of farmer's ale while watching this movie.
And I'm Austin Terry, and my spaceship can jump to light speed, but it still needs a big old bucket of coal to get there.
On today's show, we're doing something we were born to do, if you ask me. When we started this podcast four fucking years ago at this point, it was to talk about Zachary Snyder's DCEU movies, because they had just announced the Snyder Cut. We have a love-hate relationship with the man, and now he has graced us with a new series that will never be a series with Rebel Moon. We made the grave mistake of not reviewing the first movie when that came out last year, so we had to watch that and the new part two. So this episode is just going to be all about talking about the saga. Let's just fucking get started here. We have a lot to talk about. Austin and Keith, I'm so glad the three of us are back together. It's been a while. But at this point, I want to know, did you have any interest in watching these movies if we weren't doing them for the podcast? Because like we joked, we didn't watch the first one. I think originally, like late last year, maybe we threw it on the schedule at the end of the year. Like, yeah, that'll probably be a fun, like, you know, bullshit episode to talk about. And then we did something else instead. So we didn't watch it. And now we had to watch two of them. And then I guess I just want to know. We got to get into some non-spoiler thoughts on Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon Parts 1 and 2. It's a big can of worms to open here, so who wants to start?
Yeah, I can honestly say, if we were not going to cover these movies for the podcast, I would never have seen either one of these films. That said, I'll start out positive. Whoa. I went into these films expecting the worst movies I've ever seen, based on the dialogue that is out there, based on how they launched on Netflix with those terrible Rotten Tomatoes scores. I don't think they're that bad. They're not good. There's nothing original in these movies. Everything Zack Snyder does, whether you love him or hate him, with the slow motion and the terrible writing, like, that's all in these movies for sure. That said, I found them to be like a barely passable sci-fi project. So not like a glowing recommendation. It was certainly not the 4-hour slog I was expecting. There are some characters I found interesting. I actually want to see the extended cuts just to figure out more about the lore in this world, because the lore is not explained very well. And there's pieces of it I found interesting, with like this king being dead who like had this princess that was supposed to save the world, and like kinds of weird stuff there. The central characters I could care significantly less about. The driving plot I don't really care about. The action I didn't find very creative. There's a hippogriff in this movie. Like, there's nothing original in this movie. Like, he borrows things from everything else. So it's like, if you love Zack Snyder, you'll probably like these films. If you don't like Zack Snyder, you definitely won't like these movies. If you're like me, like kind of someone who's in between of like, I like some of the stuff he does, you'll probably be like, it was okay. I'm not like dying for anything else, but I don't regret watching the movies. I guess that's probably the most positive thing I can say.
They weren't that bad. I think that's the best way to put it. I'm kind of like you. I don't know. I don't want to say I went into them because I didn't read a whole lot about it, but I did try to go in with an open mind. And I have to say, the first half of the first one reeled me in. I was enjoying it.
Yeah, I want to talk about that later, because I like 45 minutes and I was like, I'm kind of digging this. Like, yes. When is this going to get bad?
But then, Keith, what happened during the second half?
Second half, I fell asleep. Then so last night I was like, all right, I gotta rewatch this movie. So first half of the first movie reeled me in. But like you said, Austin, it very quickly started throwing in some ripoffs from franchises we know. That there were some decent action scenes that, for me, that I did enjoy. As far as the visuals, I think there was some decent visuals there as far as like the way the planets looked. There's some scenes with a robot that we'll get into later that looked great. I do think there were some strong characters. As you said, Austin, the execution just was not there. The lore wasn't making any sense, or at least it wasn't explained enough to where you would care about some of these characters' past. They definitely had some like what they tried to have some like mic drop moments, and you're just not you don't feel anything.
Well, let me chime in there, Keith, because the characters' backstories is like the most baffling parts about this movie, because Zack Snyder knows like no one cares about these characters. So there is a round table scene in the sequel where they just give you their backstories.
Unbelievable.
And like, it's things like that are like, and that's half the second movie.
Yeah.
Is them telling their backstories. So there's baffling things in this movie, the choices he makes.
Halfway through the second movie.
Yeah.
It's like, wait. It's like, this is bad pacing, but if you were going to do this bad pacing, shouldn't this have been in the first one?
Yeah. And they build up certain characters or certain things about the lore, and then that stuff that they build up is maybe in it for 5 minutes, you know, then they cut to something else. So yeah, just to finish up my non-spoiler thoughts, they weren't that bad. I had some fun with them, but there was a lot of ridiculousness along the way. And I was left just kind of very confused by the story he's trying to tell.
I love that review. Not that bad. I had some fun times, but I'm really confused. Yeah, you know what? I think it's going to be a really fun episode because I'm kind of with you guys too. After hearing for months, because again, it's weird that we're doing this now. The first movie came out months ago. And just hearing how bad that was. And then this one comes out recently and they're saying, holy shit, this one's even worse. They weren't that bad. So take that as you will. They weren't as bad as
I expected. We keep saying it wasn't that bad. And I'll just throw this out there. Star Wars has worse things than this. Like, this would rank, like, Mandalorian Season 3, anybody? This is better than that.
I think I might hesitantly have to agree with you.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, Book of Boba Fett? I mean, maybe Zach's onto something. But, you know, I'm kind of with you. Like, there's a great premise here. And I'm very much with Keith, and it sounds like Austin's reaction to Keith, you're in the same way. The first, like, half, or at least, like, the beginning of part one, I was like, damn, dude, this movie's good. I'm hooked. I'm having a good time. And then it just goes off the rails with, like, they're introducing so many characters that they don't give any screen time to or any care to. And I'm like, well, this is the main plot now, right? It's kind of recruiting these characters. I wish I cared about them. And then we'll get into it later. But yeah, I don't think I would have watched this had we not done it for the podcast. But I'm also glad we're doing it for the podcast, and I'm glad I watched them. I simultaneously hope that this like bombs so bad that they never make any more, but I also hope they make like 12 of these. But yeah, weird movies. I'm excited to talk about them, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those episodes. The most glowing thing I can say is like, it's not as bad as I thought it would be, but it is bad.
Yeah, I think we're all in line. I guess I'll throw this out there too. We're going to have to talk about some of the choices he makes when it comes to who gets screen time in this movie. Because, yeah. Keith, you talk about the robot. The robot's the most interesting character, and they get 10 minutes of screen time in this four-hour like saga.
We're 100% on the same page.
There are choices where someone, I think, just needs to like sit down with Zach and have an honest conversation and be like, dude, you're great at visuals. You clearly have like a creative mind behind you. You cannot have Final Cut of your films.
Stop fucking writing them.
At least he didn't try to do comedy in this one.
Yeah, you know what? That's a decent point. Yeah, less levity, I guess. Is that a good thing? I don't know. Well, you know, if you're somebody that hasn't watched Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire. Also, the titles. I laugh every time I say them. If you're somebody that hasn't watched A Child of Fire and Part 2, The Scar Giver, which, by the way, it turns out it's not an interesting title. It's just about somebody that gave somebody a scar once, which I think we've all probably maybe done or it's been done to us. So not very interesting when it comes to like a sci-fi space opera. I guess go watch those movies. But as you guys know, whenever an episode rolls around and it fits, I do say this. I'd also kind of recommend, if you don't want to watch them, don't. I think we're going to have a way more fun conversation and kind of give you the essence of it. So you don't need to waste 4+ hours. This summer, whenever he releases his 3-hour actual R-rated version, kind of bonkers. He didn't do that in the first place. It's fucking Netflix, dude. It's on a theater. You probably should have done that first.
He's made some interesting claims about why he did that I can't wait to talk about.
Yeah, he's a liar at this point. We can't support him anymore. But yeah, I guess go watch the shitty versions and come on back if you want to listen to the rest of us. But I'm kind of leaning towards don't watch them and just stick with us for the spoiler section. You're going to have a good time. All right, guys, before we get into our freeform discussion here, let's do some cast, crew, and critical reception talk. And this is like, you know, we do this every episode, but I think I might be the most excited for this section, more so than I've been in a long time. So let's get it started, guys.
All right. Well, of course, The Rebel Moon Saga is directed by the one and only Zack Snyder, known for decent projects like Dawn of the Dead and 300, known for his fan campaigns for the Snyder Cut, but of course, he has made some pretty dogshit movies like Sucker Punch. And Matt, you put this in there, but how dare you? Also Batman v Superman.
Whoa!
The movie is written by Zack Snyder, who, why does he keep writing his own movies? We'll never know. As well as Kurt Johnstead and Shea Hatton, and scored by Tom Hulkenberg, a.k.a. Junkie XL.
All right, going through our cast, we got Sophia Boutella as Cora, Michael Huseman as Gunner or Gooner? It's pronounced
Depends on which character he's talking to.
Or like Gunmar at some times.
They say it four or five different ways. We got Ed Skrein as Noble, Staz Nair as Tarek, Donna Bay as Nemesis, Charles Hunnam or Charlie Hunnam as Kai, Ray Fisher as Darian Bloodaxe, Cleopatra Coleman as Devra Bloodaxe, Corey Stoll as Sindri, Fra Fee as Belisarius, and we got Jaimon Hansu as General Titus, and Anthony Hopkins as the voice of Jimmy, a.k.a. the narrator as well. All right, guys, there's our cast and crew. Any positives, any negatives? What do we have?
Ed Skrein as our villain, Admiral Noble. He's like the only person actually acting in this movie. I thought he was great.
I agree!
I hated him throughout this film in the best way. I found his death very satisfying, but every time he was on screen, making my skin crawl, thought he was awesome as the villain. I'm also going to call out Jaimon Hansu as General Titus. Of the like side characters that get roped into this, I also found him great and very interesting and like the only person I actually cared about in this film. So those two definitely stood out to me.
I'll shout out like a smaller screen time role. And I was telling Matthew when we started it, that's the Corey Stoll as Sindri.
Yeah.
I thought that was an excellent 5 minutes that he got in that beginning. It really reeled me in.
Yeah. The tension was there in that scene. Like my heart was racing. I was like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah. I thought that was such a good scene. I thought Corey carried it really well. So shout out to him. But I'll also shout out Anthony Hopkins as the robot voice of Jimmy. I thought it was really awesome. I've never really heard his voice with that kind of like filter on it before. And it sounded great. So unfortunately, we didn't really get a whole lot of Jimmy. Probably one of the coolest characters of these movies. So
wild.
Hopefully, if we do get another movie, I guess we'll hopefully get some more of him.
Supposedly, the extended cuts fix that. I guess Jimmy is an actual character, which is like exactly what he said about Cyborg and when he did his extended cuts of
Don't
the
say that to Ray Fisher, Austin. Because he's championing the Snyder Cut, and then he's like, I'm going to be in Zack's new movie, and now he's like watching it like, oh, I'm not in this. Oh, wait, he's also releasing his cut this year? Oh. Yeah, dude, it's weird. I'm totally with you on Jimmy. That warrants its an entire conversation. I don't know about you, Austin, but Keith and I were laughing so hard every time he would come back on screen, because like we'd be like, oh, he has a cape now. It's like, oh, that's fun. Yeah, I think you guys took the actual good ones here. I don't have much else to say. I did tell Keith while we were watching that Staz Nair is Tarek. He probably should play Tarzan in the live-action Disney movie if they ever make that. I don't know if that's high praise or not. That's all I really had to say about that character. Also, this might be the first time in almost 200 episodes of podcasts where, you know, we always do the cast and crew, and it's like, who's positive, who's negative? I don't really have a take on either of these. It's more just like that. It's like, yeah, this guy would be good in Tarzan. Also, whenever Duna Bay came up, and Keith and I were like, Nemesis is such a cool name. And then I was like, yeah, I loved her in Cloud Atlas. But then I have nothing really to say about her in this one. So it was a very weird watching experience. I think you guys took the good ones. So I think I might just, you know, leave it at that. All right, guys. Well, with that, let's go a little bit deeper. Let's get into our freeform discussion, the main part of the show, and break this all down, because there's a lot to talk about. Where should we start, do you think?
Let's start at the beginning, because we've all kind of referenced it now, but the intro to the first movie did hook me, and I want to know if we kind of made it to the same point. For me, up until the point where Korra kind of kills that first batch of guards and then does say her line of, like, we're going to have to fight, that's where I had to stop it and go run some errands, but I was like, holy shit, like, I'm pretty into this and can't wait to come back and see either if I disagree with everybody or like where this actually breaks bad. But I was really into like all the setup at the beginning of the movie.
This beginning was genuinely good, in my opinion. Like, I was hooked, and I was hooked pretty fast. And I think, to your point, Austin, I was kind of thinking, hey, guys, look, Rebel Moon, I've heard bad things, but they might be wrong.
I thought we were going to be, like, the contrarians out there. Like, we are going to be the ones campaigning for the Snyder Cut.
Hey, you know, we'll do it if we have to. But anyway, after seeing both of them all the way through, I'm not going to be. But, yeah, it was a great beginning, kind of pulled you in. I don't know. I'm just, like, a sucker for this shit when it comes to, like, sci-fi. Like, this, like, huge universe. I love, you know, like, it's very, like, technology forward. But in that type of space, I love seeing planets like this, where, like, they're still, you know, farming is how they survive. Like, they're still, like, kind of using the quote-unquote old ways. Very interesting. And then bringing in kind of the quote-unquote empire right away to question that was fun. And yeah, like no joke, Austin, it's kind of perfect that you left right after that Sophia Pitella scene, because, I mean, I think that's when it goes downhill. I mean, I was all the way in, and, like, right up until that moment, whenever she goes to save the girl that, like, these fucking, like, Imperials, like, whatever they call them in the movie, whenever they come in, they're trying to harass and assault this woman, and she saves them in, like, a pretty cool action sequence. I was like, dude, I'm in for this. And then it is, like, kind of like a slow downhill spiral. Like, spiral from there, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's where, unfortunately, it, to me, became a video game, but, like, all the parts of video games that you don't like, where it's like, here's your 6 side quests, and you gotta go get these characters, and you gotta go to each different planet, and by the way, each person is gonna stand and look at the camera and do exposition to tell you different parts about this universe, because also, Zack Snyder can't write. So, from the time we move on and are doing all this lore dumping and exposition, it's all, like, the worst, like, shitty dialogue it could be.
It was so clunky, too, of how they introduced everybody. Like, especially Charlie Hunnam's character, Kai.
That was my favorite thing about the entire first movie, is that once they recruit Charlie Hunnam, he's a name, right? I mean, people know him. Like,
yeah.
And so once they recruit him, you're like, oh, shit, okay, so he's going to be our smuggler. He's going to be the Han Solo type. And then the rest of the movie, every time they were, because, I mean, literally the rest of the first movie is just them recruiting other people. So, like, whenever they're recruiting other people, it just cuts back to him occasionally, and he'll just be like, huh, and then it'll cut away. Like, he doesn't say anything until his line where he's just, like, talking with Korra, and he's like, you know, is this the life for me? And then in the very next scene, he betrays them and then dies. So, it's just a wild character. And, like, look, I watched the BVS, like, director's cut, and I was like, that first movie sucked. This is, like, slightly better, I guess. Whenever we watched the Snyder Cut, I was like, okay, Zack's cooking. This is really good. I don't know if you can really fix that with, like, 30 more minutes here. It's just, like, it occasionally cuts to Charlie Hunnam not saying anything, just, like, kind of smirking off screen. Like, what a dog shit character. And that turns out to be kind of the vibe for the rest of the movie. Like, they recruit, like, one person, and then they just immediately go to recruit the next. But you don't spend any time with the person that they just brought on board. So it's like, I don't care about these people at all.
I totally agree with you. And that's why in the second movie, when they do their, like, round table, here's my backstory. Yep. It's like, why didn't you do this, like, on the ship after you get this person and you're flying to get the other? Like, there's a better way to do this, Zach. Like, come on. This isn't your first movie. You should know that no one's going to like this. Were you surprised, though, that, like, the first movie really is that 7 samurai recruiting my warriors, and then the second movie is just that single skirmish? Like, it stays very small scale, and I kept waiting. This is maybe a positive or a negative. I kept waiting for it to kind of become that larger, like, full-scale rebellion, and I was pretty surprised by the time the credits wrapped that it really is just this one battle for this one little town.
It's weird, because this kind of, like, sci-fi space opera, I would have loved to have been one movie. I mean, kind of that small-scale battle where it's like, look, they introduced, we all talked about in the first half, we were loving, like, that small village, like, on the outskirts of this empire imperial thing, like, and, like, we have to protect it. That would have been incredible. And it's weird it's 2 movies, and now it's, just, we'll talk about this later, but it's also especially weird they're talking about this being, I think, 6 movies total is the plan if they had their perfect world on Netflix. Like, they want it to be 6. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I like the vibe of this being smaller, but obviously, as we've already said, the problem is, in order to do something like 7 Samurai, you have to care about the characters. You have to care about who they're recruiting. You have to spend time with them and to have, like, good conversations as a group. And you have really none of that in both of these movies. You've got fucking two movies here, and you did really none of it. Like, we have like the scene we're joking about where like they give us the long extended backstory like halfway through the second movie. It's just the pacing does no service for me to care about these characters. And it's like, yeah, there was some really great stuff once they talked about their backstory and you see flashbacks. Like, there was some good stuff in there for sure. But then it's just like where you put it in your two movies is off, because then when they die immediately after, it's like, oh, you're expecting me to care because I just started caring about them. I wish I cared about them in the first movie so that could pay off in the second when they make a sacrifice for something that they're not even involved in, but they're choosing to be involved in. It's just, yeah, it's very, very strange.
And I think to your point, Matt, this should have been one movie.
Yeah.
Because this is like the natural, once you save the small village, you prove that the Empire can be defeated. Like, this is a natural stepping off point into the broader galactic conflict where the rebellion grows and you finally like take the fight to the mother world.
Yep.
What do you guys think about how all the sci-fi type stuff, I guess, mingle together? Like, what I mean is, you got the spaceships, you kind of called it out in your intro, Austin, it runs on coal, but you also got them plowing fields with an old-fashioned plow and like a horse-type animal. But then their buildings still have like electronic doors and they still have like screens and everything like that. And then they go into like the ale house or the cantina, and it's like medieval music playing, and they're wearing newsboy caps, look like they're dressed from the 1920s. You have like all these
I love the newsboy caps.
Yeah, you have all these different like time periods all together, which I thought was interesting. What do you guys think?
I mean, I like how it's all kind of mixed together, because I think like if you look at like real world, like things evolve at different paces. So
yeah,
like some technology isn't as advanced as other technology. So I found all that interesting. Where it doesn't work for me is it kind of falls into like how they just kind of throw lore at you, where there's interesting things there, but then that they're never really explained. Like, they reveal that the ships are running on coal in this broader engine room where they have a being like hogtied that they're like throwing coal into its mouth. And then that never comes up again. And it's like, what the hell is that? Like, why is this giant tied up in the engine room? And the effect of like this, all this black smoke, like billing out of the ships, like it looks cool, but it feels like it's only there to look cool. And then when you like zoom out to the broader lore, like talking about this very evil king, but who is ushering in this princess who's going to bring good to the world. Like, how does that work? Well, that's not really explained. So there's all these interesting things that are just thrown out to you, but then they never come up.
But I will say, when it comes to like what you guys are talking about, like the whole, maybe like the fusion of like different, like eras and all that stuff. One thing I did call it that I did really like as just like a quick little positive was, I love that like you would see the villains in their military garb, and then like later, without kind of any call out, you would just see them wearing like a typical like white dress shirt and black tie. I did really like that. And I don't even really know why. I just thought it was kind of cool.
It felt more lived in. Like, it's like you're not always going to be in your military garb.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of makes sense.
So, like, there was some really cool, like, kind of set dressing and elements like that that they didn't explain, which I loved. But then when it came to the lore, I guess kind of what you're saying, Austin, like, they did explain quite a bit, but then also they didn't finish it. Like, they explained a lot, but they didn't give you a cap of an answer or whatever. And so I'm with you, too, because holy shit, the king, queen, and like princess element of this world is wildly—it's
so interesting.
It's interesting, but it's also like, so why are we introducing this? And then at the end of the second one, Jaime and Hansu just goes, "Well, hold on, Sophia Batella. What if I told you you killed the princess, but she isn't dead?"
And that was wild. That was insane.
And it's like, wait, what?
In the final 6 minutes of the movie, she reveals who she is to all her friends as the assassin.
They're like, we know.
Yeah. And like, so there's no conflict resolution there. Yeah. And then they're like, by the way, the princess is alive. Welcome to Lord of the Rings. We got to walk the planet. So would you guys say, though, that when it comes to the lore that they were building for this world, like, would you want to learn more? Like, were you at least interested enough to care that, like, care about that side of it?
I think I'm interested in the lore. I'm just not interested in the characters they chose to put front and center, if that makes sense.
And I think, unfortunately, that's like, you can say that about every Zack Snyder movie.
Yeah.
Where he does these things that are really cool and you're like, man, I wish you'd spent more time there. But he never does. So like it's at this point, it's just an issue with his direction.
So I think we're going to start closing out with some points that need a bit more time here, guys. But one thing that I really want to spend at least, you know, a minute or two on. The Jimmy of it all. This character is so good, so fascinating. If this character is so good, he didn't even need a voice. Like, I still would have loved this character. This kind of C-3PO robot equivalent. Kind of the last of these mechanical knights, as they call them. Awesome. And they give them so much time in the beginning of the first movie, and then it just becomes this weird sprinkle throughout the rest of the first and the second. Like, he's not even on the team. He's not even recruited. It's like, why are we doing this?
They set him up so effectively in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then you don't see him until they come back to the town, which is the end of the movie. And then he's wearing his antlers and he's been hunting, I guess. Like,
yeah.
That was insane to me. And every time I think about Jimmy, I'm shocked that this was not at least our main character or our secondary character.
Yeah.
Because this robot understands fully, because of his programming, the lore of this world. So that could have been our person explaining everything in a natural way to us, trying to find their purpose now that their king and their princess is believed to be dead. And then also the conflict of pairing this robot with the person who assassinated his princess could have been fascinating.
Exactly.
But they, I guess, just couldn't see that natural pairing together.
I love that scene, his first scene of interaction, I guess, with the girl in the village. That was such a cool scene by the river. It looked great, too, visually.
And the way his face like lights up, too, whenever mm-hmm. she touches.
That was so good.
Yeah.
I love that.
He has that badass, like, quick moment in the fight scene, too, where he shoots the guy, like, sideways.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
I'm sure if you asked Zack Snyder, he'd be like, well, that's a character that we're saving for parts, you know, this is a 6-part series. That's going to be a character big in 3 and 4. And it's like, well, then don't give them the most intriguing introduction in 1 and then show them for a total of 5 seconds throughout the next 2 movies. Like, it was... not only frustrating, it was just annoying to me. It's like, I want more of this character. And then when you have, like, most of the time that he shows up, it's just like a vista. Like, oh, what are we doing? Like, is this an opening shot? And then you just see like a mountain. Then you just see Jimmy with his like cool cape and antlers just like sitting there and looking at something. And then it just cuts to something else. And you're like, what the fuck? Go back to Jimmy.
And also the idea that there's more of these robots, but they all like stopped fighting when the princess died. It's fascinating because they're breaking away from their programming because they're supposed to be the enforcers of this empire.
I did think that was cool. It's like the opposite of Order 66.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Also, I know you're excited to talk about kind of the, we talk about this with Zach every time, but we have a lot here. So should we talk about the extended versions and all the shit that comes with that?
Let's do it. Right. Because, you know, we've referenced it throughout this entire episode, but there are cool ideas in this movie like there are with all his movies. And of course, Zach's out there saying, well, I know there's pieces you like and things that, you know, maybe you don't think flow well. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to fix it with my extended cut. And me and Matt were talking, we were like, dude, why did you even release a theatrical cut? Like, this didn't go to theaters. It went to a streaming service. You could have just started with your extended cut. But Zach claims that this was Netflix's idea from the beginning. He says that my branding is my extended cuts, and Netflix wanted to buy into my Snyder Cut hype. So, whatever, he's probably lying. So, Zach has talked a bit more about, like, what is coming with these extended cuts. And he says they are, tell me if this sounds familiar, completely different movies where he fixes everything. He says he compares them to a parallel universe instead of a director's cut, and they are each roughly an hour longer. He says they are going to be fully R-rated, complete with sex, gore, all the things you love in R-rated films, and the events of the film even happen in a different order. He has also claimed that pretty much every scene they shot a PG-13 version and then reshot an R-rated version of the same scene, also complete with different dialogue and different writing depending on which version of the film they were filming.
So, a different movie. Okay.
We have to watch both of them again. Yeah, honestly, it gets to a point where it just feels, I don't even know what word to use.
It feels stupid.
Yeah, it is stupid.
Stupid, for sure. But isn't that also just disrespecting us as the audience? Like, look, Zack's, I love a lot of Zack Snyder's movies and his work, but I also hate a lot of it. There's not a lot of his stuff that I feel very in the middle of. I can understand after the whole Snyder Cut fiasco with Justice League and then HBO Max becoming a streaming service, then like, let's pick that up. I would understand that Netflix is like, let's capitalize on that. But now he has no argument because he shot Justice League fucking, at this point, almost 10 years ago. And then they shelved his version. And they're like, hey, you come back and you release your version. He's like, okay, I'll do that. This is different. This is purposeful. This is like, hey, we want you to make two Rebel Moon movies. We want to make six with you, but let's start with the first two back to back. Shoot them PG-13, but then everything you do, also shoot them R-rated. Like, this is purposeful, and I hate it. Like, this is gross.
He would say he was filming them for two different audiences. One is for the family to watch a sci-fi, and then one is for, like, his hardcore fans.
I hate it. It's just kind of, like you said, one of y'all said, like, it's kind of sick in the head. It's like, I want my audience to beg me for my other version of this.
Yeah, that's definitely. And he's on the record now saying, I want a fan campaign for Sucker Punch. So he clearly, like, he wants this, like, feather and this hype for all his movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird. I think his ego is starting to kind of take control, unfortunately.
I will say, though, I don't know what this says about me. I am interested enough in this universe that I'm probably going to watch both the extended cuts.
Yeah, right. I am, too. That's what they hope for. But, you know, to that point, also, something Keith and I were talking about, and I'm sure, Austin, you'll agree. I do feel, you know, I just use the word gross talking about how, like, Netflix and clearly Zack Snyder, who they've worked together before, like, you know, Army of the Dead, and he also just, like, teased his new, which I am excited for, his, like, Norse anime series that's coming to Netflix, like, maybe this year, next year, doesn't matter. But so clearly he's, like, in with Netflix.
He has another movie coming out about an architect, which is, like, not an action film, which is interesting.
Hey, I would love to see that. That sounds actually, I would love to see him tackle something different. But what I was going to say, I use the word gross kind of talking about that process. But what's especially annoying to me, and I also think is gross, is that so they release, and forgive me, I'm not going to know the exact dates. I just know that Rebel Moon Part 1 came out at the end of 2023. Came out the end
December.
Of last year. Okay. Oh, December. I was going to say no. Oh, wow. Okay. So very recently. And so then the part two, which again, they film back to back, comes out in April, end of April. So not long to wait. The thing that, like, especially really bothers me is the first one comes out, the second one comes out, and then Zack is like, here are two movies you can watch on Netflix. Go watch them. Go support them. Please. I put all my heart into this. And then he's like, hey, also good news. My R-rated actual director's cut, which I really feel passionate about, those are both coming out this summer in 2024. I'm like, so you didn't even put out your director's cut of the first one after the first one. You're expecting us to watch both of these and then watch both of them again? I hate it. Like, that's so sick. It's like, you think about director's cuts back in the day with, like, DVDs and, like, that kind of stuff. It's like, hey, watch both of these. They're both, like, I love them, but also they're kind of shitty. And then, like, this year, support them again. I love these. These are the actual versions. It's like, dude, what? Like, you're buying into your own fandom. Like,
yeah,
we supported you because you didn't buy into it. And now you are. And now you're kind of, you're kind of ick.
Even if you go back to Watchmen and then the Snyder Cut of Justice League, like, both of those films are like, hey, I was actively trying to make better movies and the studio intervened.
Yep.
And then with this franchise, it is now, hey, I intentionally made two very bad movies, but I want to show you how good they can be. It's like, why did you waste 4 hours of my time?
And what's scary is that some other young director that's up and coming is going to try to copy that too.
Yep. You know,
he's like, I want to be just like Zack. I want people to be begging me for my new version. So I'm just going to put out half-assed versions every time.
When then you have his fan base on the internet harassing people who don't like his movies, and he's just kind of stoking those flames too. His fan base is a whole other side of this coin that is like you're actively inviting that feather online, and you're actively inviting the toxicity of his fan base to continue operating the way they have been for years now.
And I guess I made the joke earlier, but I do sympathize with somebody like Ray Fisher with what he went through. Sounds very disgusting. And whenever the Snyder Cut of Justice League came out, I was like, fuck yeah, dude. He went from being somebody I was very intrigued by in the theatrical to, like, maybe the best part of the Snyder Cut. What does he think about this? Like, I truly want to know. Because he's good in this movie. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, really good.
But barely in it. We don't know anything about him. And then he sacrifices himself. And we're supposed to care? I literally turned to Keith while we were watching. I was like, I don't care. Like, it's... And I guess it's just going to be, well, you'll care when you see the Snyder Cut. But it's like, but hold on. He did both of these versions. He did theatrical and the Snyder Cut.
Well, and Zach has said you do spend more time with the Rebels and with Jimmy in the extended cuts.
Of course, he has to. He's got to tease us. He's got to tease us.
Which is like, I'm interested. I want to see it. So it's working. It's working. I'll say that.
I'm with you. Like I said, I'm backing you up. If they do end up releasing them both this summer, I will watch them out of curiosity.
Are we going to have to watch 12 movies if they do 6 of these?
I guess eventually. Only if they're successful. But that's a good point, Austin, because before we like officially close out here, you know, this month, co-writer Kurt Johnstadt announced that though original plans were for a trilogy of movies, which I can kind of see, that kind of makes sense, the franchise will eventually, apparently, if they have their way, consist of a total of 6 films, explaining that the stories for each original installment have been expanded into 2 parts. Now, I'm already confused by his statement, so I guess what he means is that we got Rebel Moon Part 1 and Part 2, and then we'll get, you know, Part 3 and Part 4 released close together, and then Part 5 and Part 6 to end it.
I guess. Every story in this universe takes 2 parts to tell.
Do a little duology.
Even though we've already proven you could have done this story in 1 movie.
Exactly. But he also stated that the treatments are completed for the 3rd and 4th movie, and that Snyder is currently writing the 3rd film. Now, why, you know, since Johnstadt is the co-writer, why is he in an interview saying that Zack Snyder is writing a movie that he's not involved with? That begs questions. Zachary.
It's because he has to go through and say, well, I want slow motion here. There's going to be a man cutting down a tree.
We need to talk about that. In this movie, most of the time, it's just showing like mundane tasks.
There's a slow motion scene of a guy walking down a ship ramp.
Yeah.
Why?
We were calling it out as we were watching it. I was like, there's slow-mo again. There it is.
Yeah, this movie was 2 hours. It could have been an hour and a half if you had just, like, you know, made everything in real time.
If you thought wheat cutting was already a boring activity, wait till you see it in slow motion.
Very factual. So, on the same day that Johnstadt said this, Zack Snyder stated that the total number of films in the series will either be 4 or 6. Depending on whether or not the 2nd and 3rd entries of the trilogy each get split into a 2-part movie as well. And I laugh so hard reading that because I don't even really know what he's trying to say. So I guess they want more Rebel Moon. To his credit, these movies have been like number 1 in terms of, like, you know, whenever you like scroll through Netflix and see what's the most watched movie. They have been on there every time they've like came out. So if that's enough for Netflix behind the scenes, maybe that this will happen.
In many ways, Netflix is almost the perfect home for Zack Snyder because they don't care about reviews. They don't care about like things getting nominated for awards like a traditional studio does. They only care about hours watched on their site. It's why they've made 9 seasons of Love is Blind. All they care about is when you release something, it stays in the top 10. And these movies are doing that. So I think as long as he maintains that viewership, I think Netflix is going to let him keep going.
We'll see. Honestly, part of me wants to do an episode on when those come out this summer. I kind of want to watch them and see, like, are they different enough to warrant us talking about them? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I agree. But then the conversation, too, is really then going to be, why did you make these shitty versions? Like, if they're that good. Because imagine if he had just put out the good versions, if they are actually better, all the news and coverage of this would be different. It'd be like, wow, Lucasfilm, you really should have bought this project from Zack Snyder because it's great. Instead, it's like, Zack Snyder's Star Wars ripoff is dog shit. Don't watch it. Like, does he want all that stuff out there?
And then he'll go on Rogan again and be like, I'm just going to keep doing what I do, you know, and piss people off. And
he's like, look, people are mad at me that Batman killed, but I don't really get it. It's like, okay, dude. Ben Affleck, Rebel Moon Part 3. We'll see it happen.
Henry Cavill, too.
Actually, Henry Cavill way more likely. But yeah, guys, let's get into some Arnie's Podcast Awards. I think we're going to have some good ones for these. This is the part of our show before we close out where we take something positive, negative, or something in between from whatever we're talking about and just give it an award. You know, it's not the Oscars, but it's damn near close. So, guys, what should we award today?
I'm going to give the, hey, maybe this wasn't fully thought out award. And this is, you know, a broad, giant galaxy. But really, we only see one bar full of aliens, and it's the original cantina, where we have that like one alien that is like controlling a person. You have the person with the tentacles that kind of looks like Ahsoka. And then the rest of the movie is humans interacting and fighting each other. So was this universe really fully thought out? That's the question I'm posing today.
The answer is I don't think so.
Yeah, we were pointing out like we were as we were watching both these movies, we're like, okay, let's play a game where we try to guess which Star Wars character that would have been or which character he's ripping off.
I am so fascinated to see what this story would have been in Star Wars.
We did say that often. We were like, you know, I'm not going to promise it to the fans, but we did say a fun episode of this like podcast would be like pitching Rebel Moon the way Zach did. Like which characters fit into what he was trying to do. Like who would have been in this? Like it would have been interesting.
I'm going to give the Bear Grylls award.
Ooh.
That goes to Our Lady Korra. At the beginning, she is sniffing She's sniffing that dirt.
Oh,
we all know Bear Grylls loves his dirt.
You're right. I love dirt.
Did you like the weird like love triangle that was never fully developed between the hunter and Gunner?
Den and Gunner, or Gunnar, as they said.
Look, like we said, I was very into the first part of this movie, but I think the first time I laughed and like turned to Keith, like, that's stupid, was whenever, like, this guy runs up, like, Korra! He's like a fucking grown man. He, like, runs up to her, and he's like, he's in love with her. And then it cuts to them in a bar, and he's just, like, kind of staring at her and, like, looking at his shoulder. It's like, this is the dumbest love triangle ever.
I will say, though, that Hunter Den had a badass moment in part two when he's blowing up the tanks, and then he jumps on the
that
ship.
That was pretty sick.
Oh, he was looking
that
good.
Was pretty sick. So my award does tie into this a little bit because the Gunner of it all. I don't know what type of character. I don't know what adjective to use. I guess maybe just strange character. But I was very polarized at the end whenever he's dying in Korra's arms and he had no beard and no facial hair. And it really turned me off. So I'm going to say the biggest mistake was to have him die with no facial hair. I don't know what to call that award. I would say maybe it's like facial hair is best award because, man, Haunting of Hill House, you have Rebel Moon. He looks great in everything with that look. Game of Thrones as well. But in this, whenever he dies and he's like nothing on it, I was like, I don't know if I like him anymore.
Yeah, I'm just going to give his character the wet blanket award because he kind of sucks. And he goes around like everywhere he goes. He says, I'm just a stupid farmer. And then he also gets a wet blanket from that Sam girl. So just the all around wet blanket award.
Wow. So are you saying that Zachary and the writers were aware of that?
I think they were. Actually, no, they probably weren't. Zach was like, this is the most amazing character I've ever written in my life.
Hell yeah. I best believe it. All right. Well, with that, everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you hit that follow button so you never miss our upcoming content. Also, please share us with your friends if you enjoyed this episode. We really appreciate that so we can continue to grow our show. Please leave us reviews as well. Even if you don't want to write anything, leaving us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. Wherever you get your podcast, really does help us out. At the Arnie's is our social and the Arnie's.media is the website. We'll be back next Tuesday with another episode.
And last week, Matt and I got together and talked about the festival darling, Late Night with the Devil. It is kind of a smaller, low-budget horror movie making the rounds these days. If you want to hear our thoughts on that movie, be sure to go check that episode out.
And lastly, we want to hear from you, so please send us a message on Instagram at the Arnie's or email us thearniesmedia@gmail.com. What did you think of the Rebel Moon movies? Are you excited for Zach's Part 3, The Moonsucker? Should we review every single one of his movies? Anything you say we'll read on the show and react to it live on our latest episode.
And remember, if you ever give somebody a scar accidentally in your life, you might be called a scar giver. We thought that was going to be like a bigger, cooler name, but it turns out if you're a main character in a movie or TV show, if you just accidentally give somebody a scar, you're a scar giver. Not very interesting. Anyway, thank you, Zach. See ya.
See ya.
You're a wizard, Korra. Oh, wait, that's Harry Potter.
That's Harry Potter.